In the U.S., we incarcerate our fellow citizens at the highest rate in the world. And once they're in prison, we give the incarcerated hardly any thought at all. But one program works to help improve our imprisoned population by teaching them college courses inside, along with college students coming from the outside. That's the Inside Out program on this episode of Criminal Injustice.
Criminal Injustice is recorded at WESA in Pittsburgh. For past episodes, show notes, and more information, visit criminalinjusticepodcast.com.
Welcome to Criminal Injustice. I'm David Harris, your guide, nerd, geek, and explainer of our extremely messy criminal justice system. Also, still overjoyed to have that paycheck from my day job as professor of law at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law. Now, let's stop and think about this country's uncontrolled experiment with mass incarceration over the last several decades, beginning first in the 1970s, then really taking off in the 80s, the prison population in the United States began to balloon. By the time we hit the beginning of the 21st century, we had incarcerated well over 2 million of our fellow citizens. Once we locked people up and began doing so for longer and longer periods, it was basically out of sight, out of mind. Build more prisons, put more people in them. And we made these environments ever harsher, more crowded, with fewer services available to help people. One of the things more and more jurisdictions began to take away, in fact, was educational opportunity. Even though we knew that education, the ability to earn a GED or even a college degree, was the one thing that really improved the odds that a person inside could turn his or her life around and make it on the outside when released. And by the way, 95% of everybody inside is eventually released. Now, into this stepped a Temple University criminal justice professor named Lori Pompa. Professor Pompa had a concern for her criminal justice students. They knew little about the system as it actually worked and next to nothing about prisons. So she set out to change that. In 1995, she took her students on a tour of a state prison 120 miles from Philadelphia. And as part of that tour, the students had a discussion with a panel of inmates. The discussion proved powerful and eye-opening, and one of the inmates, a fellow named Paul, approached Professor Pompa and suggested expanding the discussion into a semester-long course. Professor Pompa liked the idea, but the logistics of taking college students 120 miles every week for a full semester to a state prison, well, that seemed kind of daunting. But the idea would not let her alone. It nagged at her. And 2 years later, in 1997, Professor Pompa launched the first such effort at a Philadelphia prison with a course called, quote, the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program, exploring issues of crime and justice behind the walls. That was the birth of the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program, which 5 years later was then inaugurated at Graterford Maximum Security Prison in Pennsylvania and has since spread across the country and around the world. Now, here's a bit of audio of Professor Pompa talking about the program from a video on the Inside Out website. The video is courtesy of Ryan Brandenburg. The music is in the original. Take a listen to this.
The usual Inside Out semester is a standard semester. So, for example, here at Temple, we have 15-week semesters. So we meet once a week at Graterford Prison. It's a very large maximum security prison about an hour outside of Philadelphia. You have about 15 outside students, 15 inside students, and people are sitting around the circle alternately, inside, outside, around the circle. What is really key to making Inside Out work is that everybody in that room has an equal voice and really an equal stake in the learning process. The idea that we are coming together as a community and learning together outside the walls of academia, it's a very powerful thing. Here we're in a room together, and we are essentially creating this space of freedom in the context of something that is quite the antithesis. We as a society are only able to continue to incarcerate 2.3 million people because so many of us don't know what's going on. part of my kind of personal mission is to get as many people inside prisons and jails as possible. That's one of the ways that change is going to happen.
Our two guests today have both been part of Inside Out from different perspectives, and they're going to tell us about how the program actually works, what it accomplishes, and how it helps build lives and change people. Tyrone Wirtz is the International Think Tank Coordinator for the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program at Temple University in Philadelphia. He also serves as a consultant for the Philadelphia Public Defenders Association and is the founder and CEO of the Lifers End Crime Project. In 1975, in his early 20s, Mr. Wirtz went to prison, convicted as an accomplice in a second-degree murder. He served 36 years. While there, he found a way to commit to improving himself and helping those around him in the prison find their own potential for good. While incarcerated, Mr. Wirtz earned a bachelor's degree from Villanova University, and he became heavily involved in developing the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program at Graterford and its affiliated think tank group. His sentence was commuted by the governor in 2012. Tyrone Wirtz, welcome to Criminal Injustice.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, you go to prison as a young man on a life without parole sentence, and you find yourself in this terrible environment in a maximum security prison, and you're disappointed and you're bitter. I watched a fabulous video of an interview with you in which you explained how you changed your life and dedicated yourself to self-improvement and to helping other people. We're going to put a link up to that on our website so everybody can see it and understand your full journey. You were incarcerated at Graterford in Pennsylvania, that maximum security facility, in many ways a very bleak and dangerous place, and yet you really turned your life into something positive. So how was it that you connected with the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program? How did that begin?
Oh, for me, you talked about the founder and how the program came about. And I had known Lori long before she even started Inside Out, because she worked at this prison reform group, and she used to come inside Graterford County Prison, so I knew her. And my personal story is directly linked to the Inside Out story based on my own educational experience inside. And the beautiful thing about the Inside Out program, I saw it as a benefit to the men inside mostly, because, you know, when I went inside a Graterford prison, my educational level was really, really low. And I knew that there were literally thousands of men and women incarcerated, not only at Graterford, but all across this country, who were kind of like me, that were smart but didn't know it, who could do college-level work but never had the opportunity. So when Lori tells me about the Inside Out program, I wanted that program there because I seen the value of education, and I knew guys could compete at a college level if they just given the opportunity.
So you knew that the possibilities were real with this program. You wanted it there. How did you go about, along with Lori Pompa, in bringing that program to Graterford?
Well, when Lori told me about the program and she explained the model to me and, you know, how you get in, because, look, everybody pat themselves on the back when they take guys who already have all the necessities to go to college. But I was concerned about the vast underbelly of guys who people kind of throw away, who didn't see themselves as college material. And so when she explained the program to me, I wanted that program at Graterford, and her and I sat down and discussed it. We wrote a proposal, and then, I want to be honest with you, the whole idea of bringing an undergraduate into a mass security prison for 15 weeks to sit side by side with men and women who are incarcerated, men who are incarcerated in Graterford, I thought was a radical idea, and on some levels, I never even thought that the administration would approve it.
Right. It seems kind of risky in a certain way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And me, because I was there so long, I really understand the dynamics of running a prison and what the concerns are, and so I knew that. I didn't want the program to be judged just on paper. So I went to all the important people who had to make that decision, and I sold the idea to them. And I told them what the value was, not only for the men inside, but what the value was for the institution.
What did you tell them the value was for the institution?
On some levels, I really believe that the DOC want guys to be educated. They provide GED services and have a school and all those things. And I thought because that it was a college-level program and guys voluntarily get in it, well, then that would have an impact on behavior inside of the prison because people would want to go to get into class. But if you had misconduct in the last year, you wouldn't be able to get into class. So I sold it on that level as a management piece, but I also sold it on the whole idea that education is a value, and when once guys get educated, that would help them reintegrate back into the community, and it would provide better job opportunities for them. So they didn't come back in terms of having an effect on recidivism.
You know, this is so good, and I hope all of the students out there, especially anybody who might be studying law, like my students are, I hope they're listening carefully because what you've just described is the real way to persuade people. You have to come to them where they are, and that's what you did with the prison administration. You told them not only will this be good for me or us, it will be good for our institution, and you had great information there to give them to show them how it was going to help their work.
Right, absolutely.
So you get started, and the first group comes in. Was it a group of 15 and 15, as some of these are?
Yeah, our model is based on 15 inside students, 15 outside students, sitting in a circle. Every other chair is inside, outside, inside, outside, inside, outside, yes.
And so were you in that class? Were you a student?
Well, you know, the funny story about that is I had already graduated. I graduated from Villanova in 1992. As I already had a bachelor's degree, I was president of the Lifers Organization, and I was running a lot of different programs doing community service work, and I just didn't see myself taking this class. What it, in my eyes, and in the beginning, I thought it was for people just starting out, right? And so I didn't really want to get into class, but when we put the posters up and the guys inside of the prisons begin to sign up, we had a list of like 60, 70 guys who signed up. And the beautiful thing about that is, although 60 guys, 70 guys signed up, Lori came in and interviewed each and every one of them and made her selection of the 15 guys to get into class.
Isn't that something? So she made this contingent on a personal interview.
Yes. I think she did that because, look, the thing about it, we really did want to have a nice mix of people in the class. That means in terms of age, race, educational backgrounds and those kind of things. We didn't want the same mindset in the whole class. So we basically do interviews and make sure we get a good mix because it's based on dialogue. And we don't want people who are kind of dominant, who want to take over where they can't listen to other people.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. What I want you to do is to have a little conversation just like that with my dean and explain to him why I need to do that for my seminars. Because
I'd be more than happy to do that.
Okay, very good. So you're in this class, the 15 and 15. It's the first class. How did it go? What did you see happening? What were the interactions like? What were people getting out of it?
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about it is that this is not a traditional classroom. Most classrooms are lecture style where we just, professors just stand in front of the class and impart information to students. And inside out class is done in a circle, is very dialogic. And of course, you know, you're talking about bringing two diverse groups together, outside students who probably have a lot of misconceptions, stereotypes about who's behind the wall. And then you have guys inside who see college students the same way, these privileged kids coming in to study us, to look at us. And so Lori was really good at creating icebreakers and things like that to really break down those misconceptions. So we normally do a wagon wheel where we just talk to each other. And, of course, you have these apprehensions. But after the ensuing weeks, a lot of that just melts away. And then people begin to see themselves as human beings across this difference. You know what I mean? And so they begin to relate to each other. And for me, as a guy that's inside who already graduated from college, I mean, I was blown away by how the men inside interacted, how they studied, how they wrote their papers. And these are guys that had never did anything educationally, who had never did anything programmatically. And here they were sitting there realizing that I'm in a college class, compete with college students, and it really upped their self-esteem. And what actually happened was it generated so much energy inside the institution because, I mean, the thing about being in prison is everybody knows who everybody is. So, and when guys begin to see their friends in this college class carrying books, sitting at the table, studying together, learning together, changing their behavior, becoming interested in school, that has a ripple effect on them. You know what I mean? So, and the class was so powerful. I mean, even for someone like me who had already graduated, it cracked me open, and it just put my life on a totally different trajectory. You know, having these powerful and deep discussions with the college students.
So you're a person at that point who's already graduated while inside. You already have your degree, and yet for you, this was so important and so moving and so mind-changing that you're willing to say that at that point it changed your trajectory even further?
Yes, it really did, because, you know, what Lori told me, because I didn't really want to take the class because I was busy doing other things, and like I said, I already graduated.
Right, you were running a lot of stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was running stuff, so I was busy, but Lori told me, because, you know, I look at the syllabus, you have to write 8, and a lot of people don't understand that this is a real college course, and the thing about it is, everybody, I think when part of the interview, Lori asked people, do you want to be graded on the curve or on the college level? And everybody wants to get graded on the college level.
They want the real standard.
They want the real standard. You raise the bar, and people will thrive to reach that bar. And so, you know, that's what happened. And like I said, I didn't want to take it, but because Lori told me, she said, Tyrone, this class is more. I said, Lori, I already graduated. She said, Tyrone, this is more than about education. You know, it's about finding some things out about yourself. And it did. It cracked me open. It revealed some prejudices and biases that I had that I was totally unaware of. And as a small example, I thought I was too good for that class.
And too good.
During this class, right, you know, it revealed that to me, yes.
How do you like that? So you see the men around you, and it was all men at this point, right?
Right, yes.
So you see the men around you.
No, it was all men inside, yes.
Inside, yes. And you see them getting a lot from this, understanding who the people are at the other points in the circle, opening their minds, working very hard, wanting a high standard. And you see yourself changing. You could feel that, too. What did you see with the college students? What was happening with them, if you can tell me?
Well, you can imagine, look. There's a quote on our website that says the wall is not there just to keep us in, but to keep the public out, right? And so, like you said it earlier in your introduction, you said out of sight, out of mind. And so when we think about prisons, we get our images, our perspectives about who's behind the wall from news media, from TV programs, from the movies. And a lot of those perceptions are very negative, like these monsters, these bad people. And then when these students come in, they come in with those perceptions, and then they begin to relate and bond just as human beings. And the outside students are blown away by the fact that they tell the guys, oh, man, you're a human being just like me.
And that shouldn't surprise you in a certain way, but you know that they don't think like that before they come in. Nobody does. That's the way our society is constructed.
This is true. This is true. I mean, we paint the image of, you know, of who's behind the wall. That's why Inside Out has this transformative effect on people, because they come in and students change their majors. But, you know, the most powerful piece of it is the students on the outside see how hard the students on the inside work. You know, because you can tell a guy inside, well, read a chapter and be prepared for next week. But they'll go back and read the whole book. And so a lot of students say, these guys, I got to step my game up because these guys are serious about the education. And you know the other beautiful part about it, when you go inside of a prison, you can't take any electronics with you.
So no distractions, none of the usual digital stuff.
And you're focused. And knowing that, you sit in a circle, so you can't hide, right? And so we do a lot of small group stuff and big circle stuff. So it's a beautiful program, and it has such a powerful transformative effect on people.
So this course, whatever course it is, it sounds like it is as much about the internal learning as it is about the subject matter. It's about learning about yourself and others as much as it is about learning whatever subject it is. So what was the subject of that first course, just out of curiosity?
Well, actually, Lori, I think her course, what she was teaching, was called Corrections. And that's why you, in your introduction, you talked about the way she learned about prisons was going inside, so she could take her students inside. So, so that's the great benefit.
So she was teaching correction, but Inside Out, that could be any kind of a course at all, right?
Actually, you know, we start out as criminal justice class, and now we stretch across all the humanities, all the social sciences. I mean, people are doing law, gender studies, history, humanities, nursing, philosophy, political science, psychology, religion, social work. People are doing all kinds of classes. Because when we do our training, we have a 7-day intensive training, and we have a model curriculum and all those things that people can use. They can take the model, and they can adapt it to the particular discipline that they teach.
And this has grown tremendously. I read that there have been something like 130 different paired-up facilities, prisons, and colleges that have participated all over, not just the United States, but around the world.
We have close to 350 institutions of college and university institutions, and we have over 100 correctional facilities that are involved. And we are expanding. We started as a local program here at Temple at Greenford, and we were just doing it as a class. We thought it was a good thing to do to give to offer opportunities for guys inside and for opportunities for students coming from the outside. And then the part that I didn't tell you is that at the end of our class, this is what makes it so powerful. At the end of our class, the students, nobody wanted to stop meeting. You know what I mean? And, you know, after the 15 weeks, the semester was over. We were supposed to end, but the students were adamant that they didn't want to leave. And so we went back to the superintendent and asked him, could we continue to meet? And we continued to meet, and they gave us approval. We continued to meet on Wednesday night. And do you know, that was in 2002. We call ourselves the think tank. And we were going to do some public education about criminal justice reform. But then someone said, we need to make this a national program.
And this was the birth of that think tank program that you're involved
right.
in now, right? Tell us
Absolutely,
about that.
Yes. Yes, that was the birth of the think tank. And the think tank is inside prison. It's made up of outside people, inside alumni. You know, people have already taken courses and instructors, and they meet. And we designed the training program to make it a national program. And since that time, we have grown from that local program at Greenford Prison, like you said, all over the country and to and around the world. And we went from doing a couple trainings a year to holding 6 or 7 a year. I mean, people are hungry for this. I mean, because not only do the students, not only are the students transformed, but the instructors are transformed in our trainings. You know what I mean? And every instructor said, I wish I could teach all my classes this way.
Now, if there was one thing that you would want people on the outside to know if they had not been in the program, what is that one thing you'd want them to know about Inside Out?
The thing I probably would want them to know, I mean, there's so much because this program is so dynamic. But I think I want your outside listeners to know that people who are behind the wall are human beings. They are smart. A lot of them have faced challenges in their lives. And so when students come in from the outside, and because the beautiful thing about Inside Out is you don't need to have a high school diploma or a GED. It's all volunteer. And it's building men and women who are incarcerated, is building their self-esteem, is teaching them value education, and they are learning things about who they are as people and how it relates to the broader community. I mean, being a father or being a mother or being just a community, a civilly engaged person. So it has value for not only the individuals who participate in it, but it has value for our larger community.
Tyrone Wirtz is the International Think Tank Coordinator for the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program at Temple University in Philadelphia, a program that he helped develop that has spread around the world. Mr. Wirtz, thanks for being with us on Criminal Injustice.
You're so welcome, David. And the last thing I want to leave you with is this. Although we are an educational program and we do education, we also build community.
Thank you very much for that. We'll talk to you again, I hope.
Okay. Thank you so very much. And whenever you want me to talk to your dean, let me know.
You are down for that. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome.
We'll be back in just a minute with our next guest to talk about the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program. Stay with us.
You've got questions about criminal justice, and we've got the answers. Now, we can't give you legal advice, but if you want to know more about something you heard on the show, maybe something you read in the news, or just something you've always wondered about that sprawling mess we call the criminal justice system, leave a message with your question at 412-407-3389. You just might hear the answer in a future episode. Be sure to include your first name and where you're calling from. You can also submit your questions or feedback online by visiting criminalinjusticepodcast.com. Again, the phone number for your questions is 412-407-3389, 412-407-3389.
Hi, David Harris for Criminal Injustice. Our show today, we're talking about the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program developed at Temple University. And we have another guest to talk about teaching the program and experiencing it from that point of view. Dr. Norman Conti is an associate professor of sociology at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh. Dr. Conti has published ethnographies of recruitment, socialization, ethics training, and masculinity in policing, as well as multiple analyses of the social networks that developed within police recruit cohorts. Dr. Conti has been leading groups in the Inside Out program for some time, and along with others, he developed the police training version of Inside Out, in which police officer recruits are brought together inside a prison with incarcerated men for a seminar on criminal justice policy. Dr. Norman Conti, welcome to Criminal Injustice.
Thank you, David. I'm a big fan and thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, too. You were listening in on our conversation between Tyrone Wirtz and me. How long have you been participating in Inside Out? When were your first experiences and exposure to it? What was that like?
10 years ago in the summer of 2007, I went out to Philadelphia for that seven-day intensive training that Tyrone talked about. And it was really interesting because I didn't know much going in. One of my closest friends is a criminologist at WVU, and he had been telling me—
That's West Virginia University,
yeah,
right
West Virginia University. And he had been telling me about the program, and he'd be driving home from teaching his class, and he'd say, oh, it's just so good. And there was a gravity in his voice the way he talked about it. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it had to be powerful. So I went out there. I gave it a shot, and I was just blown away. And really, they talk about the seven-day intensive training and how that even that for the instructors is very transformative. And what happened was I went out there, and when you go through the Philadelphia prison system and you go to Greaterford and you see these places that are just unbelievable and horrific, right? And it's like you're seeing
huge, old, big walls, gun turrets, the whole nine yards. It's real. It's not a movie.
It's medieval, and you're sort of like you're experiencing racism incarnate, right? Because when you look around, who's there? What's happening? And then it's like, you know, what does this mean? How am I here? What does it mean? And you meet someone like Tyrone, right? Tyrone was in prison.
He was at Greaterford when you went.
He was one of my trainers. Because what happens is you spend a number of days at a retreat where you go over the basics and the logistics of how to do this. But then you would go into Greaterford, and the national think tank members, the men like Tyrone and Paul and the rest of them, they were sort of your professors. They were your teachers. They taught you how to do this thing. And you're doing this, you're meeting them, you're understanding who they are, you're learning more and more about them. And then you go back and you're laying in bed at night and you're realizing I'm meeting and knowing these people who are never going to get out of prison, right? And their faces kind of stick with you and you see them when you shut your eyes.
So this 7 days, very transformative for you. The 7 days is not just sitting in a classroom in Philly. It's out in the prison at Greaterford where Tyrone Wirtz still lived at that point. And those guys are taking you through that. When you complete that, do you then start your own course? How does it work?
Well, that's sort of up to you. It's like you've gone, you've had the training. Now it's your job to go back to wherever you are and make it happen or not, right? So one thing that happened to me when I was there, there was one of the guys and he said, Norm, I'm so happy to meet you. I was so excited when I heard you were coming. And I was looking at him like, why? Why would you care if I'm here? And he says, you know, I'm a juvenile lifer from the north side of Pittsburgh.
Oh.
And I'm hoping to someday get transferred closer to home so I could get involved in some activism.
Right. So Greaterford is not near Philly, but it's closer to Philly.
Right. Yeah. It's you know, maybe an hour from Philly, and it's very far from here in Pittsburgh. And when he said that, something clicked, like, wow, this guy is going to die in prison for something he did as a kid. Uh-huh. Right. And he wants to get involved in activism. What excuse do, you know, a free person who has everything going for him like me, what excuse do I have not to be involved? So that kind of stuck with me. And one of the things they tell you in the training is don't ever make promises to the guys in prison, because as soon as you break a promise, you're just another liar to them. And before I left, I said, Jim, I'm gonna get back to Pittsburgh and get right to work on this and make Inside Out happen there. And he kind of looked at me like sideways.
Are you sure?
Yeah. And I just realized, oh, my God, I just broke a rule. I just promised him something.
Uh-huh.
So
now you had to.
I absolutely had to. And that was, say, June. By September or October, I had a class going.
And where was that?
That was at SCI Crescent, which is sort of in between Altoona and Johnstown, about an hour and a half, 2 hours from campus. So I had 15 students, undergraduates and graduate students, and we would, you know, leave Duquesne's campus and drive there, have this unbelievable class, and then drive home.
And what was the class?
The class was criminal justice policy, which is a slash class, which means it's undergraduate or graduate. So you can take it depending on which level you are. And that made it good because I could bring in different students from Duquesne. And if there happened to be guys in prison who had college degrees, they could take it at the graduate level.
So it was 15 of students from Duquesne, mm-hmm. and 15 people from that prison. And you did a course in criminal justice policy with them. How was that first experience of leading that group?
It was amazing, because what happens is you go to Greaterford and you have this you know, this transformative experience, and then the next thing you know, you've created a circle. It's every other one incarcerated, non-incarcerated. It's guys wearing the same uniforms that Tyrone was wearing at the time, and it's like, wow, you're kind of energized and you're kind of realizing your own personal efficacy. Like, I just did a little version of what Lori Pop and them did.
Uh-huh. So you go through this. I asked Tyrone what it was like for the men inside, for himself and for the students. Did that ring true to you? What was it like?
It was like nothing I'd ever experienced before. It changed me. I couldn't go back to being the same sort of typical academic grappling for tenure, trying to get articles published, hoping the students like me. I became what I – at Duquesne, we have a motto of sort of the teacher scholar, uh-huh. professor, right? And that can be hard, because what am I, a teacher or a scholar? How do I balance it? How do I
and
figure
there's
out?
A tension. How do you get the time to publish and research if you're teaching?
Absolutely. So for me, I became a teacher scholar activist, and the activism was the bridge between the teacher and the scholar that made it manageable for me to have the job that I have.
So it not only transformed your thinking, it transformed your way that you conceived of your professional life. That's what you're saying.
My professional life, my personal life, you know, my relations and thoughts about race and ethnicity, that's all changed dramatically. And I thought I was pretty enlightened back then, but it's gone to a whole nother level.
How do you like that? So here you are. You're doing this, and you're bringing students through it. Have you been doing one of these a year since that time?
Basically, we have learning communities at Duquesne, and we have a group of freshmen who come in, and they all take the Justitia learning community, which is Latin for justice. And we do a basic philosophical questions class or a theology class along with my introduction to criminal justice class, and both of those are in the Allegheny County Jail. So every fall, we're taking a class into the county jail.
Now, in a jail, this might be a little different because your population is transient. Does that change the dynamic some? Because people could be going in and out.
Oh, very much so. You can lose a lot of the inside students over the semester. I say that the guys I work with in the state facilities who are doing life, they're like graduate students. And the guys in county, they're like undergraduate. So it's appropriate to have freshmen with the county guys.
I see. Okay. So you do that every year with the county jail?
Correct.
Okay. And you're still doing others with the closest state prison here?
Yeah. There was a situation a few years back. It was 2011. There had been a transition in county government. No one really wanted to take responsibility for having us in the county jail. Uh-huh. So I had to hurry up and jump us into SCI Pittsburgh, the now closed prison, was the only urban facility in Pennsylvania. But we had 20 undergraduates go in there and have a class with the guys. And that was just some next level stuff. And we ended up forming a think tank out of that.
And that's the program that Tyrone talked about at the end of my conversation with him, the sort of alumni of the program, both inside and out, talked together to continue the conversation, the think tank.
Right. We wrapped up the class and I received the fellowship through our Center for Community Engaged Teaching and Research at Duquesne to start my own think tank and try to use this as a model to do different sorts of community engagement on campus. So I went back into the prison. I said, listen, guys, I have this idea that we could form a think tank and one of our first projects could be create a program where we can bring police and police recruits into this facility and have inside out classes with them.
Now, this is something very unusual. I mean, I have talked with many police chiefs and departments over the years about the idea of involving more community members in their training, bringing cohorts of community people in to talk to them during the recruit training. And sometimes they're receptive. Sometimes they say, we're already doing it. And sometimes they say, well, what do you really want with that? I don't know if we want to change our – you have an incredibly different idea, I must say. You want to take the recruits and bring them into prisons. And I can only imagine that must have seemed very bold to the people in the police department.
It absolutely did. And the funny thing was when I went to the training, which I've been talking about, my background, as you said in the introduction, I've been studying police academy training and police socialization and police culture for 20 years. So when I went to the police training – or the inside out training for the first time, I was like, this is the opposite of the police academy. Instead of being like a bad high school experience, It's we're sitting in circles and talking about our feelings, things that maybe men aren't so comfortable with. And I was like, maybe this is the antidote, or maybe this could be an ancillary part of it. And maybe this corrects a lot of the things that I criticize about the police academy and police training.
So you approach the Pittsburgh Police Department to see if you can get some interest in this. What kind of reaction did you get?
I talked to – we've had a lot of police chief turnover in this city.
Yes, we certainly have.
And I have talked to all of the past four and they've all been pretty receptive. And what I try to explain is that, you know, as you know, David, going back to the 60s and 70s, you had people like Peter Manning talking about the police mandate and we want the police to give us efficient, cheap crime control following the Constitution. And then he doesn't talk about this, but I do. And then while – even though you're product of a racist society, don't be racist while you're doing it. Right? Because then the people on the left are going to point at you and say you're bad because they're really concerned about their own racism and they're using you as a scapegoat. Then you have people on the right who don't want to acknowledge the situation at all. So they're supporting the police in those moments but ignoring them the rest of the point. So when I talk to the police and I can kind of explain that, they're like, yeah, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe we'll take a shot at this.
Cool. All right. So you go ahead and you bring in, I guess, 15 police recruits.
Actually, the first class, we did a pilot of it. The police department here in Pittsburgh, they put out an email. Anyone who'd be interested in taking this course, criminal justice policy for graduate or undergraduate credit, sign up and we'll put you in the class by seniority. So we had about 9 maybe people express interest. I guess that's probably 1% of the department.
Right.
And of that, 6 ended up taking the class. And so we had 6 veteran police officers.
Right. So it wasn't even recruits in the pilot.
It was 6 veteran officers. And since I already had a think tank, I had 6 guys there, Khalifa, Farouk, Fly, Malachi, Sean, and Oscar. And they were the students with the other police officers. And it was just like everything Tyrone talked about with what an inside out class does, except that when you have a regular inside out class, the stigma is on the guys in prison, right? They're the misfits and the monsters.
Right.
And there really isn't. The only stigma could be, well, these are very privileged college students. They don't know what the real world is like.
Right.
But when you do it with police, especially when you have guys who have been in prison, the last time they saw a police was probably a police officer was at their trial. And that was maybe 40 years ago.
Right.
This is their first real experience with police. What's that going to be like? They have intense stigma for the police.
Right.
They see the police as the monster.
So it's all turned around.
So it's the walls of the prison and it's the blue wall. And so it's when you bring everyone together, it is the most intense inside out. The first day of inside out is always powerful because you're bringing these young students into a prison. And, you know, getting into a prison is like – a little bit worse than going onto an airplane with the security, and then it's not usually a nice place, and you're seeing the guys in the uniforms, and then now you're in a room with them. But when you have police officers and these men who are in the first class mostly doing the equivalent of life sentences, it's just unbelievably powerful.
And so the police officers, did they report to you about what their experience was like?
Well, the most important thing they had to say was really with their actions. In every Inside Out class, what you do towards the end is you start working on a group project and might be a way to – say it's a way to improve a prison.
Yeah.
Oftentimes that's what it is. And then you present that to the superintendent of the prison.
Mm-hmm.
This first group, they came up with the idea, with a little encouragement from me, of how to make this a part of the police academy. And they presented that to the chief of police from them.
So that's how it happened.
Right. It's you know,
it came from them.
Guys like us always want to go in and tell the community, well, here's what you do, right?
Right, right. Academics.
Yeah.
We're good at that.
But really, you want to say, hey, here's some different ideas. What do you want to do?
Right, right. Oh, my gosh. This is very powerful. So that's how the recruit program gets started. And how is it going at this point?
Well, it worked out perfectly because two of the first students in the pilot – Tim and Colleen are both trainers at the police academy.
They've advanced through it.
Yes. So they helped to make it a part of the police academy curriculum. And we just last week wrapped up our second cohort to go through the academy. So now there are 50 police officers in Pittsburgh who have been through this program as part of their training. And in May, we'll put another 25. And we're going to do hopefully three classes a year as the department sort of turns over.
That is amazing. Of all the things that I have heard in terms of modifying police culture, of changing the way that people understand each other, we have had some really deep conversations on these podcast episodes, but this has real promise. I wonder what you see going forward as you talk to people who are veterans of the program, who are now out as police officers. What do you see kind of sticking with them?
Well, it's interesting. From the first pilot program, one of our original think tank members, Khalifa, he died last year right before Christmas, and there was at least one officer from that class who was at his funeral. Right?
Attended Khalifa's funeral.
Right. And they closed right after our program wrapped up with the first recruit cohort. They closed SCI Pittsburgh. And the guys from our think tank, they were kind of spread throughout the state. And one thing that's happened is there's a group up at SCI Albion, which is near Erie, Pennsylvania. They've been able to form their own think tank. And our people, and be it police or be it people from our think tank, are going up there. And the Erie police, we're trying to get them involved in working with this.
A promising avenue for real change and reform. If there's one – I'll ask you the same question I asked Tyrone at the end. If there's one thing you would like people to know – about the program, about prisons, about the people inside them that you've learned from being part of this, what would it be?
Oh, the one thing I've learned from Inside Out is what one person can do, right? Lori Pompa, who you talked about extensively, she was an adjunct faculty at Temple, right? Paul was a man serving a life sentence. These two people created a program that's now international, that's really making a difference, right? All I've done, and I get a lot of credit for the thing with the police, but all I did was take that, right? Uh-huh. Take their program they created, and yes, I'm in an interesting position that with my research, I've spent a lot of time with police officers, with my work with Inside Out, I've spent a lot of time with the guys on the inside. So I can navigate that sort of difficult position of trying to walk between both worlds, right? So the thing I want people to take away, and even you, David, especially maybe – you, especially if you're benefiting from this, especially if you're an academic person,
yes,
you have an obligation because of the life that's provided you to go out and do something and make something better. And not everyone could probably teach police training Inside Out, but you could. And there's a lot of other people like you who could. So, you know, steal my work and go do it.
I love it. Steal this book. Thanks very much. Dr. Norman Conti, Associate Professor of Sociology at Duquesne University and a leader in the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program. Thanks for being with us on Criminal Injustice.
Thank you so much, Dave. This has been great.
now let's wind it up like we do on every episode with another edition of Lawyers Behaving Badly. This edition of Lawyers Behaving Badly comes to us from the Legal Profession blog and the ABA Journal News Online, and it concerns lawyer Michael E. Reichel of Kearney, New Jersey. Lawyer Reichel had filed a grievance, an ethics complaint, against another attorney, his former employer, and some others. And that complaint, like others of its type in New Jersey, goes to the Office of Attorney Ethics, or OAE. The OAE and its staff apparently didn't see things lawyer Reichel's way, and this got Reichel pretty upset. In fact, Reichel's anger led him to write emails to the OAE, specifically to OAE's director and to another person on the staff. Those emails are textbook examples of why an angry person should never write an email in that moment of anger. Here's an excerpt from the email lawyer Reichel wrote to Charles Centenaro, the director of the OAE, to express how he, Reichel, felt about Director Centorino's failure to view the facts his way. Quote, "Hey, Charlie, here's an example of what your fucking ambulance-chasing attorneys and their minions do to honest, hard-working attorneys," close quote. And further, says Reichel, quote, "Look, personally, between me and you, all caps, go fuck yourself." That was followed by 20 explanation points. To the OAE staff investigator, lawyer Reichel sent a separate email, which ended with the following, quote, all caps and in bold, quote, "This is a fucking atrocity that an honest, law-abiding attorney should have to go through this shit. Tell Charles Centorino that I said to go fuck himself. Quote me in your report." Close quote. Lawyer Reichel signed both emails with his name. No internet anonymity here. And just to be extra polite, he replaced some of the middle letters in the words fuck, fucking, and shit with asterisks. Well, as you might guess, this attempt to influence the OAE did influence them, but not in the direction that Reichel might have hoped. They dismissed his own complaints and then found that lawyer Reichel was in violation of attorney ethics rules himself, specifically New Jersey Rule of Professional Conduct 3.2, which says, quote, "A lawyer shall treat with courtesy and consideration all persons involved in the legal process," close quote. And lest there be any doubt, the New Jersey Supreme Court, which had the final word on the case, clearly sees the officials in its own ethics office as people, quote, involved in the legal process. Quoting the court's opinion, the emails Reichel sent, quote, contained vulgar, highly offensive language directed at a significant official in the court's attorney discipline system, close quote. Yeah, so by the way, Attorney Reichel, the state Supreme Court thinks your speech was so offensive and vulgar that you violated a rule of professional conduct. They also seem to think that in your anger, you acted in an almost impossibly stupid way. You created the basis for discipline against yourself and sent the evidence right to the people who would find that you violated the rule. Nice. The result? A reprimand. Lawyer Reichel, when you feel that anger coming on again, step away from the keyboard. Back away from that keyboard, sir. That's Lawyers Behaving Badly, and that is another episode of Criminal Injustice. Review Criminal Injustice on Apple Podcasts or your other podcast apps. Those reviews really do help people find us. Subscribe to Criminal Injustice through our RSS feed or any other way, frankly, and share us with your friends and all over social media. Got a burning question about the criminal justice system or about something you have heard on Criminal Injustice? Submit your question to our Ask Dave feature. Call us at 412-407-3389 and give us your name, where you're calling from, and your brief question. Also tell us how we can contact you if you want to ask your permission to use your question and the answer. We won't share that contact information with anyone. You can also use our Ask Dave tab on our website to send us questions and suggestions for stories and issues and lawyers behaving badly that we should cover. Find us at www.criminalinjusticepodcast.com. I am David Harris, back with you next time.
Criminal Injustice is written by David Harris and produced by Megan Harris and Josh Rawlerson. Interviews are recorded at the studios of WESA in Pittsburgh. For more information, links, and past episodes, visit criminalinjusticepodcast.com, where you can submit your questions and comments.
The U.S. uses long-term solitary confinement in its prisons, even though solitary has devastating effects on prisoners' mental and physical health. Some authorities call long-term use of solitary torture. So what can we make of our prisons using solitary confinement for prisoners with significant disabilities? The effect of solitary confinement on disabled prisoners on the next full-length interview episode of Criminal Injustice. Hear it on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app or at www.criminalinjusticepodcast.com.